broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. By way of introducing our guest for tonight, I'm going to read from the New York Times last week. Quote, after blowing into town on a one-eyed painted pony, a larky Texan named Howard Wooldridge looked a bit beleaguered. He had just arrived in Manhattan from the West Coast, riding some 3,300 miles to New York. Mr. Wooldridge and Misty, his 11-year-old pony, took the Broadway Bridge from the Bronx and rode down the West Side on Broadway. He wore dirty jeans, three neckerchiefs, and a dusty Stetson. His arms were sunburned and his face weather-beaten. His bedroll was tied behind his saddle and a bag of carrots stuck out of a saddlebag. He held Misty's reins in his chamois herder's gloves. He ambled down the sidewalk, nodding to passers-by and using greetings like howdy and morning. Mr. Wooldridge, 54, a former police officer in Michigan and a seasoned horseman, made the trip to gain publicity for his campaign to legalize drugs, the same reason he and Misty rode from Georgia to Oregon in 2003. Mr. Wooldridge handed out cards with the name of a group he helped found, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I'm proud to welcome once again to our program, Howard Wooldridge. Hello, Howard.
Hey, Dean.
Yes, sir. First off, a hearty handshake and a pat on the back, my friend. Just wonderful work. Wonderful work.
Well, thank you, Dean. Yeah, we did put out a lot of work. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Team Howard. I had the six people behind me making sure that everything we wanted to accomplish in this mission was accomplished, and they worked hard, tirelessly, for 7 months to make sure that the message got out there.
Well, what a lot of folks don't realize is that there is no Chisholm Trail out there. There's no easy way to get across America. You're on the highways and byways. Tell us about that trip itself.
Well, you know, we started on the beaches of L.A., basically, and went 33 miles of concrete jungle to get out into the first little bit of shoulder of the highway. Followed the major highways, less than interstate, and we were on an interstate a couple of times where there's no two-lane. But, slowly but surely, at about an average of 28 miles a day, made our way across America, and the response was just tremendous.
Now, let's talk about the reason you did this, sir. Tell us why.
Well, Dean, it was my hope when I first started out that the publicity I could gain, the influence I could have in going across America again, would end the drug war 1 week sooner. Whatever it is, 10 years down the road. And, you know, we're losing about the drug war, the drug prohibition is causing about 100 Americans alone to die every day, and probably another 100 around the world. So if we could end this drug war a week sooner, we would save 1,400 lives. And as a police officer, to save 1,400 lives would just be a tremendous, tremendous, wonderful feeling for me that I'm doing some good.
Well, and I agree wholeheartedly with you, sir. It's this prohibition is certainly more destructive than the use of the drugs themselves. Let's talk about the organization you belong to, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Well, we're comprised, you know, as a former and current police officers, judges, prosecutors, anyone who's dealt professionally with the war on drugs and knows from the time in the trenches that this is a catastrophic failure as public policy, and that the current policy will never, ever have any impact on the availability of drugs in this country. In fact, quite the contrary, it exacerbates and makes things worse. And we believe simply that this should be a policy where the government regulates and controls these 10 drugs, as opposed to today we have the criminals, the terrorists, the drug gangs, Osama bin Laden. They are the management team, if you will, completely in charge of these drugs, setting price, purity, availability, franchises, etc. They spend all the profits. And, of course, they cause tremendous harm to society. We believe that if you have a drug problem, go see a doctor.
Yes, sir. And the shirt you wore, you had worn it before this ride, but certainly tell us what was written across the back.
Well, I want to talk about that. I have changed. I've got about 20 of these shirts. I don't have just one, so I've worn a bunch of them out. But no, the shirt says simply, cops say legalize drugs. ask me why. And that was the spark, the catalyst that sparked thousands and thousands of conversations across America. And I got to tell you one great story, Dean, that tells you exactly where America is in 2005. I'm coming into a donut shop, yes, a real donut shop, Dunkin' Donuts, in outside of Schenectady, New York. And the young lady there selling the donuts said, why? And I said, we want to focus on people flying airplanes into buildings, drunk drivers, and child molesters. And she said, oh, well, I agree with that. And if you legalize it, wouldn't that take all the profits away from the terrorists making all that money? Dean, I didn't even prompt her. She just automatically made the leap that said, yeah, you take money away from terrorists when the government regulates and controls it. Dean, I'm so excited that America finally has the this policy understood that it's a catastrophic failure.
Absolutely right. And I guess the next step is through that sharing of information and, if you will, emboldenment through that knowledge that people might actually contact their elected officials and force that change to take place.
That's exactly it. You know, there's so much. I started doing this 8 years ago, and the cynicism was so great. This will never change, never, never change. And I always use the analogy that no one thought the Berlin Wall would ever fall down. But of course it did. And today we're in the same situation. We have to have faith that with enough people pushing on this policy, it will fall into the history books like alcohol prohibition. And my profession can once again focus on true public safety threats.
Well, as I understand it, the first section of your trip, you did not necessarily have a recreational vehicle, doing a little bit of camping, staying where Ketchikan, I suppose. Tell us about some of the highs and lows of the trip.
The lows came in after California, and I received almost no publicity through the most populous state in the country. Getting into Arizona, I was faced with, they had tremendous rain, which was good for Arizona, but what it meant was the sides of the roads were covered about 18 inches of grass and other weeds, and it's a perfect place for the rattlesnakes to hide out, and I had people telling me that I'm crazy to be walking on the shoulders of roads where these rattlesnakes absolutely hang out. And I don't do snakes either, and that was hard. It was hard on me to be so concentrating on every little movement in the grass ahead of me, Misty and me, to make sure she didn't get bit or I didn't get bit with a rattlesnake. And again, the major media was ignoring us completely through Arizona and into New Mexico, and then Misty was developing some problems with arthritis, and so I was walking more to take the burden off from her, but the lowest point came when I was in Taos, New Mexico. I just, you know, had gone through Albuquerque and had a wonderful rotary, but just the media was just not there. And that was the purpose of the ride, was to get, you know, gain media. And I told Jack Cole, our executive director, that when I got to Denver, I was just going to pull the plug, because this was just silly to put out all this effort for no gain. And that was absolutely the lowest point of the trip, was right there about the 10th of May. I was definitely going to pull the plug.
But you did not. I apparently there was some recognition followed soon thereafter?
Well, yes and no. What happened was Jack, being the leader that he is, he understood what I was saying. He commiserated with me, but he said, Howard, you don't know what you're doing to the website. He said, we're getting thousands and thousands of hits every day, and they're all looking at what you're doing. So you're doing a lot of good for Leap. Keep the faith. It'll happen. You know, just have faith and trust that the media will come around eventually, the closer you get to New York City. And based on his little pep talk, I kept going. And then when I got to Colorado, it did start to pick up. Got some TV, got some press. And the rotaries were good in Denver, and then they got the RV going, and which made my life a lot easier. And then it was all wonderful from there, Dean, between the RV allowing me to sleep properly, and then two horses that take the pressure off of Misty, and then the media, we leaped, as we say, we leaped Nebraska, we leaped Iowa, we leaped Madison, we leaped Chicago, we leaped the entire length of Ohio. Just wonderful media. Came out, national Fox television coverage. It was just, it made those last 2,000 miles a little easier to handle when you know that you're getting the message out and accomplishing the goal of the mission.
Indeed, indeed. It certainly helps keep you going, gets you up in the morning, keeps you on the road. Now, for those equestrian lovers out there, you say you had the second horse join you part way along, but let's talk about Misty. She's basically gone with you twice across America. This sets some sort of record, has it not?
Yeah, it actually from the time I started, we just found out about 2 months ago that there was a guy about 30 years ago who did coast to coast both ways. So I'll be the first person in this century and the second person in recorded history, which, you know, that's not important. What's important, Dean, is that we got the message out. You know, we threw, especially with Norma and me, Norma was with that, with the RV, you know, the Leap Mobile, and with those famous words blazoned across the entire RV, cops say legalized drugs, ask us why. And she had hundreds and hundreds of people stop by. She passed out leaflets. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands saw it because she would park the RV in places where, you know, many cars would drive by. So we threw thousands of pebbles into the ponds across America, and you don't know where those ripples are going to stop, because we know we sparked literally millions of conversations. Somebody once said that, you know, don't report the news, be the news. And that's what we did, Dean. We were the news. We're getting on the nightly news at 6, National Fox, National NPR. We got the message out. We were the news. So for almost pennies, we reached 12 million people.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. The New York Times even made notice of your arrival in town. Again, Howard, you've done something that very few would venture to do, fighting the heat, the rattlesnakes, the traffic, the rain, and all the other obstacles out there to make it back across America.
Now, Dina, you know, all that being true, but understand that the goal here was to make America a better place, and America has been so good to me. I've been very blessed. I've had a great life, and I've got my health, and I had a good horse, and it was just a no-brainer to get back in the saddle and get this message out to the to across America to get this policy over with. I can tell you, at the end of the day, the final person who advised me in this thing was a Mr. Bernie Ellis of Nashville, Tennessee, a wonderful man who was giving away free medical marijuana for years until he was finally caught, and now he's serving, I understand, an 18-month sentence. He said, Howard, if you can do it, if you can muster the courage, yeah, get back in the saddle, get the message out to millions and millions, and get this policy over with quicker. And it was medical marijuana patients across the country that I talked to that inspired me, that gave me the courage to go on when all I just really wanted to quit. It was the Bernie Ellis's and the Stormy Rays and men and women like that really helped me stay in the saddle.
You know, I find it very strange that the government continues to talk about medical marijuana as if it's not a fact. And yet, just today, I read that the magazine New Scientist and the British newspaper Globe and Mail were both carrying stories indicating that the use of cannabinoid for those who have had a brain injury helps to rebuild neurons, helps to rebuild their brains.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they say it has no medicinal value.
Well, understand, Dean, these people know it has medicinal value, the same as the drug companies. And we can all get into conspiracy theories, but I simply follow the money as who's opposing medical marijuana. You know, with the polls across America, even in Texas, 75% of Texans support the concept of marijuana as medicine should be a question between doctor and patient. Simply put, Dean, these government officials aren't stupid. They know it's medicine. That's why they fight it tooth and nail. They're paid off by the drug companies because they don't want you growing your medicine in your backyard for free, like Thomas Jefferson did. They want you to spend $500 a month on their pills. And it's all about money, and that's why with the polls in the 80th percentile, it's still almost impossible to get it through a state legislature, because the politicians, most politicians, are listening to their leaders and denying the people their own medicine to grow in the backyard. It's all about money, Dean. Everybody knows it's medicine, including the drug companies and these government officials who poo-poo it. So it's not a question of education. It's just a question of power, politics, and money.
Yeah, so true.
I know that's depressing.
Exactly. It hurts to think about sometimes. But we do keep on keeping on, don't we, Howard? The truth will win in the end. It will win when people dare to write that letter, when they dare to contact their legislators.
Yeah, we need some courage out there. We really do. We need patriots who are strong enough to buck the trend and dam the torpedoes full speed ahead And, you know, to tell your listeners, you know, I've been wearing that T-shirt for 6 years, and nobody's taken a punch at me or shot at me or anything else. I mean, never gotten a ticket. The cops have never, trashed my car or whatever. It's not that big of a deal. It just takes a little bit of courage to get out there and say, "Mom, say legalize pot," or "Dad, say legalize pot," or "medicinal pot." Whatever your listeners' interest is, wear the T-shirt and spread the message. It will astound you how many people will come up to you and thank you for your courage to wear the T-shirt and spread the message.
And again, only those whose mortgage payments depend on it will argue with you. That they need the drug war to continue to meet their mortgage payment.
Well, you know, and Dean, there's so few out there. I mean, I've had about 14,000 people ask me why in the last 6 years. And in the last 2 years now, I've had almost nobody come up and argue with me and say, "You're out of your mind, you're a lunatic, you're crazy, this is going to destroy America." As I said, America told me they know it's a failed policy. And that's the basis of all the conversations. Well, I'm not sure legalization is a good idea, but certainly what we're doing now is a failure. That is not simply the consensus. That's 99% of the American people.
You know, Howard, we had a discussion earlier this year, and apparently you'd gone through a town, I believe it was in Michigan, where a baby had gotten a hold of mother's powdered methamphetamine. And you had a wonderful response to that, because that seems to be the current hysteria going around, methamphetamine.
Sure.
But tell me again what that situation was and your thoughts in that regard.
Well, you put it in a capsule perfectly. You know, the kid got into the mom's meth. And if mother could have bought her amphetamines legally at the drugstore, they would have been in a childproof cap, and the baby could have never opened it. I mean, but because it's a non-prescription, you can't buy this under normal conditions. Of course, it was a situation open for the child. Again, another baby hurt because of drug prohibition. It's unfortunate, but that's what we're looking at all the way across America. You know, the people responded well, especially the minorities across America. I'd say, they'd ask me why, and I'd say, you got two choices. Either we continue building prisons, stuffing them full of black and brown people, or we sell drugs in a pharmacy and take away the job option of a 14-year-old to get killed on the street corner. And minorities across the country just responded wonderfully to that, Dean. I went through 40 blocks of Southside Chicago ghetto. I had about 60 African-Americans ask me why, and everyone, 60-0, agreed with me that it would be a good idea to sell them in the pharmacy and take away the job option for our teenagers to get killed selling them on street corners. So the America now knows this policy has to go. The question is, how fast can we do it? And that's where, we have to keep pushing and pushing.
Indeed we do. Well, once again, I want to remind folks, we've been speaking with Mr. Howard Wooldridge, one of the founding members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a man with great courage and who just crossed back across America, him and his horse, Misty. How's Misty?
Misty is now resting comfortably at a farm near Washington, D.C. in Maryland. She's with 60 other horses on about 180 acres. There's a new friend out there making sure she has carrots every couple of days. And she's doing well. Actually, from her tendonitis she had in when we crossed the Missouri River in Omaha, and I gave her about 5 weeks off, she's now back to running 8 and 10 miles a day. And I don't want to push her. I didn't push her past that, but she's fine. The arthritis in the front has diminished, and the tendonitis in the rear end is gone. And I'm happy to say that she's back to full strength, and right now she's resting her spirit more than her body, because this is a tremendous stress on everybody, man and animal, to plug into 30 miles a day. It is a tremendous stress.
Indeed it is. Howard, share your website with the listeners.
Yeah, please go to www.leap.cc, like Charlie, leap.cc. If you want to learn more, click on Howard's Ride. But, you know, join LEAP. It's free. And basically joining LEAP is a vote to end prohibition. And that's what we're looking for, is to send a strong message to these politicians that the millions, literally millions of Americans support the concept of ending drug prohibition.
Howard Wooldridge, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Dean.
All right.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Constipation, diarrhea, dizziness, drowsiness, itching, hair loss, wetting, swelling, thirst, vertigo, inflammation of the lung, kidney disease, congestive heart failure, and headaches. Time's up. The answer, Aleve for headaches.
Okay, you know, we offer $1,200 to any drug warrior willing to come on the show, anyone who would accept the Dot Award named after my recently deceased mother. But of course, none of them will ever do it, and the reason why is Howard and I were talking about it. They can't defend it, and therefore I consider them to be cowards.
I have an answer to the absurd notion that the United States government leads the world in eternal drug war. Here are just a few passages from the United Nations Political Declaration on Global Drug Control. Drugs destroy lives and communities, undermine human development, and generate crime. Drugs affect all sectors of society in all countries. In particular, drug abuse affects the freedom and development of young people, the world's most valuable asset. Drugs are a grave threat to the health and well-being of all mankind, the independence of states, democracy, the stability of nations, the structure of all societies, and the dignity and hope of millions of people and their families. Therefore, we, the states members of the United Nations, call for the strengthening of regional or sub-regional mechanisms for law enforcement authorities to deal with criminal organizations involved in drug offenses and related activities. It goes on and on. Look it up at www.un.org. This declaration makes it clear that across the globe, world leaders recognize the dangers of drug addiction and are fighting to end it. Drug legalization advocates conveniently forget to mention that when you advocate drug legalization, it's you against the world. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
This is Phil Smith with this week's Corrupt Cop Story for the Drug Truth Network. I don't mean to pick on the Lone Star State, but Texas certainly has its fair share of corrupt cops. This week, down in McAllen on Monday, three former Rio Grande Valley City police officers were indicted on charges they took money to escort loads of smuggled dope through the small border town. Victor Benitez, age 33, address unknown, Eddie Alvarez, age 30, of Sullivan City, and Melissa Martinez, age 30, of Roma, each faced charges of conspiracy to possess narcotics with the intent to distribute, for using their official positions to protect vehicles loaded with drugs in exchange for money. All three were arrested Tuesday morning. This looks like another case of a sting directed at cops. According to prosecutors, between September 2003 and May 2004, all three accepted bribes of between $500 and $1,500 to protect, quote, what they believed to be drug loads, end quote. They now face up to 60 years in prison if convicted on all charges. As always, there are more corrupt cop stories this week. Check them out online at the Drug War Chronicle. Just go to www.stopthedrugwar.org.
Phil Smith, who does the corrupt cop stories for us each week here on the Drug Truth Network, was recently in Kabul, Afghanistan, for a drug symposium. Tell us about that, Phil.
Well, I spent 3 weeks in Afghanistan. The excuse for me going was a proposal by a European drug think tank known as the Senless Council. They're based in Paris. They had a very interesting proposal to deal with the Afghan opium problem by taking some of the crop and licensing it and thereby diverting it into the international legitimate medicinal market. Very interesting idea. They put on a two-day symposium in Kabul to discuss it and to present the findings of their initial feasibility study. Of course, the UN, the US, and the Afghan government all rejected the proposal even before they read the feasibility study. But it did excite quite a bit of interest, not only from Afghans, but also from the Western community there in Afghanistan. You've got to understand that Afghanistan is probably more than half dependent on opium in terms of its national economy. Opium accounts for anywhere between 40% and 60% of gross domestic product there, depending on who you talk to. And employs hundreds of, it provides a livelihood for hundreds of thousands of Afghan families. If we were to succeed in eradicating the opium crop in Afghanistan, if that were to magically happen tomorrow, the country would fall apart. So it's a very difficult, knotty situation. No one really knows what to do. And the Senless Council came up with this very reasonable proposal as a partial solution to the problem. Of course, it being a reasonable proposal and the U.S. government being involved, I really see no chance of it ever coming to fruition.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at MPP.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
You know, Winston would have been right on the money if he had put the word prohibition after the word drugs, because it is the prohibition that causes the problems. Okay, this is a Drug Truth Network uneditorial. It's come to my attention that certain programmers out there of potential affiliate stations feel that my editorializing may turn off certain people who otherwise might want to get on board the anti-prohibition bandwagon. About 18 months ago, I made a pledge to cut back on calling drug warriors corrupt corporate whores, and much worse. I've basically made good on that pledge, though I still occasionally call them evil bastards. Truth be told, nearly everyone, whether they speak openly for ending the drug war or are still clinging to a bit of superstition or ignorance, know the drug war is not working and that we need to do things differently. Therefore, today I make another pledge to the programmers auditioning our shows and to the listeners out there. I shall endeavor to avoid editorializing and shall allow the truth spoken by our numerous guests and knowledgeable Drug Truth Network reporters to suffice. When we started the Drug Truth Network some 4 years ago, I was a lone voice in the wilderness, a belligerent, vocal proponent of drug legalization, shouting over the airways. Now we find doctors, congressmen, judges, cops, and many others willing to speak the full and evident truth that the drug war is a failure. Always has been. Always will be. I shall strive to be 99% editorial free. Next week our guest on, on the Century of Lies program will be Phil Smith with his, report from Afghanistan. As I understand it, Phil was able to get out and look at a few of the, opium farms and, get a feel for the country, the war that's going on. And then we'll also have the author of Seven Ways to Beat Addiction on this show, the Cultural Baggage Show, Dr. Stanton Peel. And he's a very knowledgeable guy, written several books. And basically his thought is that the majority of people who are addicted don't ever go to treatment, don't go to doctors, don't use pills, and don't need any help. They manage to do it by themselves. I am a prime example of that truth. I was a speed freak for numerous years and just decided one day that it was no longer for me because I learned what a horrible drug it is. I didn't need to go to prison. I didn't need to, have my life altered by governmental authority. Next week I'll be going to Hartford, Connecticut, as part of a drug conference being put on up there by Aetna Insurance and a local college and the city of Hartford itself. It will involve a discussion between DEA agents and health providers and experts from around North America in trying to bring about the necessary change. This follows on the heels of similar conferences in Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, and other cities across America. Phil tells me we've only got a few minutes left, so I just want to say this, that it's up to you to make the difference. You know the truth. You are the difference, and you need to take the time to write that letter. Please visit our website. It's up there for your use. It'll put you in contact with about 13 of the best drug reform organizations out there, and that's at endprohibition.org. Endprohibition.org. Inprohibition.org. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jap dancing on the edge of Canada.